When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, BT and Sal back on the Fan. You know, Saturday night, I'm in Dallas, and I get an alert on my phone, and, you know, you see the news about Lou Kardasek passing away. And, you know, it's not tragic because the man was 99, but boy, it hit me, man. I'm not going to lie. It hit me. I think many of you who've listened to me over the years and obviously follow my work with St. John's, and not just me, but you growing up here and knowing what Louis meant to you and everything he meant for the Big East and just his amazing class, personality, and giving nature. He was one of a kind. So want to talk about Lou a little bit, and who better to do that with than a New York kid, obviously, born and raised here, coached the Knicks, obviously coaching the Johnnies now, and that is head coach Rick Pitino on the Fan with BT and Sal. Coach, how you doing today, buddy? What's happening?
I'm good, thank you. A little, it was a tough day for everybody at St. John's. Me personally, I don't know what it was. I lost three friends in one day, two very close friends, Father Ed Bradley, who sat on my bench at Kentucky and Louisville for every game, and one of my best friends down in South Miami, a singer from the late 60s, Steve Alamo. And then I got the news late at night, and Lou, I said, what a day. And I couldn't believe it. And, you know, with Lou, like you said, all three of these gentlemen all lived great lives. And as Catholics, two great things that we have, one is confession, and the second thing is that we believe that a life when passing is to be celebrated. And there's no better way than to take a glass of wine, take a soft drink, take a drink, and just say, here's to Lou for the next 10 years for St. John's fans, because Lou epitomized what John Wooden was to UCLA and what Lou is to St. John's, or Mike Kay is to Duke. He epitomized all the great things about St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, humble, hardworking, just cared about the players more than himself, and just a special, special man.
He's the best, man, and well said, Coach. You know, and you know this, but for those who might not know, you're a little bit too young, whatever, 2 years at Providence, one of which you went to the Final Four, you obviously coached against Louis, and so many of the conversations about Coach are about his giving nature and his witty nature and his self-deprecation. But what was it like coaching against him from, matching the wits, the basketball wits? What was Louis like on the bench during a game?
Louis was very intense, never sat down, hated officials, but didn't show. You would never pick out his hatred. It would be under his breath. You would never know he hated officials. And he was very intense, had 3-hour practices, sometimes 3.5-hour practices that the players talked about, going over half-court sets over and over and over. He said to me this summer, my first year, he said, he's watching practice and he just called me over. And I said, what's Lou? And he had the raspy voice at that time. He said, do you believe in water breaks? and I said, yeah, coach, that's a good idea. Everybody break for water. And then he said to me, Listen, from Buck Freeman on, we wear long pants. I had shorts on. It was 80 degrees, and I coach in my gym shorts. And he said, St. John's, we wear long pants. Buck Freeman always wore it. I said, Coach, just let me know when you're coming. I'll put my long pants on.
Don can't wear shorts, Rick. You know that. You know the rules.
But during the game, we had a great game my first year. We won at the buzzer. But Louis was going ballistic, saying there was 1 second left on the clock. The ball was out of bounds. Louis was probably right. There probably was 1 second. I told my guys, get in the locker room. I never forget this. I ripped the shirt off of Billy Donovan. I said, get in the shower. Hurry up. Take your shoes off. And Timmy Higgins and another official come in, and I got two guys, Delray Brooks and Billy, I threw in the shower. And the referee says, we have 1 second left. You got to come out. I said, my guys are in the shower, Timmy. We're not coming back out. And they looked in the shower and saw Billy and Delray, I believe it was, in there. And he said, do your players always shower with their socks on? And I said, Billy, what do you take your socks off? And we didn't come out. And Louis went crazy on that. And then also that year, I think it was at Providence, Delray was the second year. That was that game. The first year, I remember the game at Providence because I told Billy Donovan to foul Walter Berry because we had a foul to give. And he picked up the ball barely over half court, and Billy reached in, only shot the ball. Much like that game the other night, uh-huh, where they didn't give it the Northwestern game.
Yeah.
And they gave Walter Berry two free throws because as he was reaching it, he went through a shooting motion. And I said, okay, don't worry about it. Walter's a 65% foul shooter. Just make sure we block out. And then we lost that game in overtime. So we had great games, games that you go back and you scratch your head about because it was so close. And then I think the last game I coached against Louis was in the Big East tournament when Mark Jackson was there. And that was the year we went to the Final Four at Providence. But great games, great coach, great person. One of the few people I've met in my life in the coaching profession that you nobody ever said a bad word about. And that's quite, you know, you can write a book with the bad words about me. But with Lou, you know, nobody would ever say a bad word. Kind person, giving person. When you beat him, he gave you that one handshake, looked you in the eye, and said, good luck, and looked you in the eye. When he beat you, he looked you in the eye, and he shook with two hands. He took his other hand and put it on your forearm. He was much happier at that moment.
Coach, you guys going to be doing anything to honor Lou Cornacek? You going to be wearing any sweaters with those shorts of yours, or what?
Oh, nice.
Well, I'm sure we're going to have a patch of some symbol with Lou. They're working on it now. We're going to have a big thing on campus, Memorial Mass for Lou, which myself and the whole team obviously will be at. But, you know, I think just for St. John's fans, you'll always tell stories about Lou because of what he represented. You know, I, along with all the other coaches that coached here, are caretakers of Lou's legacy. That's all we are. We're just caretakers at St. John's of what Lou built. And I'm very proud to be a caretaker of Lou's legacy.
Well, and you have an opportunity to do something special here. As you know, this program has been down. Really, I think one of the reasons why, and I know Cornacek was a great coach, but he was the last guy to really make St. John's a relevant big-time program. You have that opportunity in front of you, Coach. So being that he's passed away now, you know, just shy of turning 100 and maybe a chance to get this team back into the tournament this time, how much does that mean in regards to the legacy of Lou Cornacek?
It means quite a bit. You know, we are not where I had the Kentucky-Louisville program yet, but we're on our way. We're on our way. We're getting better talent, better athletes, and we're on our way. This year it'll be an interesting year because what I thought was going to be a much better league, and certainly it's better from the bottom. DePaul right now is undefeated, but it's early on, it's not as strong at the, in certain areas.
Yeah.
So we got to take care of business because, you know, I think Providence will get a lot better when Hopkins comes aboard. He's one of the premier players in the league. Certainly, Connecticut had their struggles, but they played three tough games, and they're all new. People forget this is not the championship team that Connecticut had last year, but they have great talent that, like the rest of us, has to be molded. Because they're not all back. And certainly, Daniel molded them into a very good basketball team. Xavier's very good. Creighton, when they get healthy, will be very good. Marquette probably is playing the best basketball right now. And DePaul, certainly a big improvement. So the league will get stronger as the season goes along. But right now, we've got a big game with Kansas State, who will be the most talented team that we have faced top to bottom so far this season.
Wait, they got more talent than Baylor? Really?
They do. They do. Oh, physical talent.
Wow.
They go very deep. We don't go by the scores.
Uh-huh.
They probably have one of the, they have a very large salary cap, let's put it that way. it's crazy that I would ever repeat this in my coaching career, that college players have a large salary cap. But they got Coleman, from Illinois, I believe it was, who's outstanding. Gessen's outstanding 6'9", 6'10 player. Housen from Villanova shooting the lights out. Doug McDaniel, who killed us at Michigan last year as a backup point. They got a Cora Gore, Max Jones. They got Rich, a great power forward. So they're very deep. They're the deepest, most talented team.
Okay.
And they're very, very athletic. And what they do is all weakness. That's the thing that scares me most, is they are a great three-point shooting team. They shoot almost 39%, 38.2% from the three. Great shooting team, and we've got to make sure we haven't. If there's one area that we have failed at so far in the early season, is we haven't defended the 3-point shot well.
So Rick, I talked to Rick Pitino, of course, head coach St. John's, BT and Sal. We know you're a big Yankee fan. I want to get your thoughts on Soto in a minute. I want to get your thoughts on the Knicks defense, because I know you watch the Knicks still every night when they play. But I want to get back to something that Sal asked you and just kind of follow up a little bit. Now, I've watched you run practice and the intensity in which you coach. We've all seen that during the games. And we all know that you're possessed to win and absolutely overtaken by the sport of basketball. It just pumps through your body. So wanting to win more is almost hard for somebody like you. But maybe pressure's not the right word. But don't you feel a little extra, I'll use the word burden, to win for Louis, if that makes sense? Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, punch through for Louis this year?
Yeah, I said, I think from the first day on the job, I felt that way. I felt that way with replacing Denny Crum at Louisville. I don't think you can get caught up. I think you want to do it the way that Louis would want to do it, the right way. And that's play great basketball. So I think it's a self-inflicted pressure with me that you just want to win every possession almost, but you have to understand the human weaknesses that players will have today. It's a little bit of an entitlement. You look at the Knicks and people say they're not playing defense. Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I watch a lot of pro basketball. Nobody's really playing defense anymore. It's become a three-point, I wouldn't say joke. I think the analytics are such with the NBA that they're saying that, look, the shot within 5 feet or the three-point shot is better than the Kevin Durant ball fake two-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think the
watch.
Analytics come into it's not
it's
really
tough,
fun.
Rick.
I mean, it's not. I'm not as big a fan as I was 2 or 3 years ago, because it's just up and down three-point shooting, up and down three-point shooting. And it's not the Knicks' poor defense, because Tibbs is a great defensive coach. It's just the philosophy of the game. You know, it's you down the pick and roll. You know, you force him to his weak end, and if you're too far back, you're going to shoot a three. The transition game is no longer Magic Johnson coming down a look-away pass for a layup or a dunk.
Yeah.
It's to pull up for a three. So it's not as much fun. I was in a meeting with David Stern, called a meeting with UB Brown, Pat Riley, Chuck Daly, myself, and a couple of GMs, and he wanted to change the game. It was too physical, and only at that time, only one team was breaking 100 points. And we went through everything possible to try and get more scoring in the game. And really what we came up with at the end is, got to call more fouls. The players will get used to it. They won't play as aggressive on the ball or off the ball and chucking people. More freedom of movement, and you'll get more scoring in the game. So from that point, at that meeting with David Stern, to where it is today, now you've got every team scoring 130, 120, and it's no longer the defense being played.
All right, so how do you correct that?
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, Coach.
Somewhere in the middle lies the truth. You now have to get more physical play back in the game, less fouls called, and get more defense into the game where teams are averaging 112, 114, yep. not 125, not 130. So the correction that David Stern made that night with that meeting evolved into something that you see today, and now you have to revert back to the old days when Michael Jordan played, and it was very physical.
Mm. BT and Sal, we're on the fan with Coach Rick Pitino. Is there anything that you learned? You say you watch a lot of the pro basketball game. Are you learning still, even at your age, even with your experience as a coach? You're taking anything that you see in the current NBA and applying it to what you do with St. John's?
I'll tell you where I learned the most about basketball. It's two areas. 2 years with UB Brown taught me how to prepare for a game almost like a scientist. That was one. And two, going to the EuroLeague in Europe, where it's like, it's great college players at 30 and 32 years of age. The ball, if you want to see great basketball, watch a EuroLeague game. The cutting, the passing, the backdoors, the bounce passes. So I learned, if you ask me, my learning curve in my 50 years of coaching, the 2 years with UB Brown, I learned the most in preparing for a game, the preparation, the analytics behind preparing for a game. And the EuroLeague taught me so much more about good offense, good movement, good player movement, good ball movement. And I really, really, at 65, went over to Europe and not only traveled to countries I've never experienced in my life, but also learned so much about basketball.
That's awesome. All right, so we know you're a big Yankee fan. You go to all the playoff games, even though you've thrown out the first pitch in Queens as well. I get it. You got to work both sides of the aisle, man.
I mean, come on, Coach. Your team is in Queens. You should be a Met fan, for goodness sake. What the heck?
I'm not an anti-Met fan. I am a Met fan.
He's like me.
I'm a guy. Remember, I grew up going, sitting in the bleachers with Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, Yogi Berra, Johnny Blanchard, Hector Lopez in left field.
Yeah,
And then going up to Krubeck and Richardson days. And,
Pepitone.
You know, so many, you know, say, so, even going to Thurman Munson. And, of course, later on with Jeter and so on. I'm a huge Yankee. I'm a season ticket holder. Those are my seats. They're not given to me. I pay my hard-earned money from St. John's.
I like it. Tickets. Yeah, that's right. You do, man. You basically can touch Aaron Judge's bat if you want to reach over. You're so close. So,
Coach, you ever can't get rid of him. He's in BT and Sal.
That is true. Hook us up, man. And listen, instead of paying me for the TV show that we do, give me those tickets. I'll go, me and Sal go.
Anytime you guys want, you can have them.
Yeah. I believe
Coach him. I believe him.
Hey, so do you think, listen, Cohen, Cohen's got a ton of, speaking of money, I mean, he can buy every seat in the world, basically, with his $20 billion valuation. You think the Yankees keep Soto?
I think if it's close, he stays. If, you know, it's obvious from the first comment he made after the season, he said, I'm going to listen to everybody. And, you know, it's after a point, if it's $600 million versus $580 million, I think he stays with the Yankees. If it's substantial, with his agent and knowing a lot about his agent, I think he's going to go to where he feels comfortable playing, where he feels he can get the most out of his abilities, and then he'll make the decision on baseball. But if it's not close, it's going to go to the highest bidder. And if that's the Mets, if that's the Red Sox, it'll go that way.
You know,
I hope it's the Yankees. He's a great player. It's fun to watch him. Just a great hitter. He's very patient at the bat. He doesn't swing at a lot of bad balls, so I hope he stays with the Yankees.
Yeah, so do I. You know, listen, I didn't even think I was going to ask you this, but I'm curious your opinion because, you know, baseball is so mental and almost the harder you try, the worse you do. You know, as a coach, because you're watching the Yankees, obviously, as a Yankee fan, but with a coach's mind, how do you process when a player goes from being the best in the world to looking like he's so average or inferior like Aaron Judge tends to do in October? How does that happen to a pro athlete?
Well, it, as you know, the pitch, the tough curveball down the dirt he was swinging at. And I think it's like, I'll use this analogy with coaching. You know, I remember early on at Villanova, they were all over Jay Wright, all over him, that he can't win. And now the guy's a legendary Final Four winner. They said the same thing early on about Coach K, and then he became a gigantic winner. You know, it just takes a little time, and he'll get used to swinging the bat. He'll get used to the curveball. The pressure gets to these guys. You know, it's, you're guessing a lot with the pitch count. And before it's over, he'll hit those balls. And there's no doubt in my mind that Judge, like A-Rod. A-Rod, when he first came, was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Striking out a lot, and then he got better.
Maybe he just started taking more steroids. That's why he started hitting Rick.
Well,
I guess Judge
is a great hitter, great person, yep. Great leader. He'll come through. He'll watch. You know, I watch the players as they come back. They study the iPad and they study it. He'll study his weakness of where the ball's going, be a little more patient with it, and he'll guess right. He'll understand the pitch count. He's a great, great baseball player, and he'll come through for the Yankees. It's just a matter of time. When you have that type of makeup that Judge has, he'll come through. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, Mickey Mantle struck out a lot, too. And he'll come through for us. There's no question in my mind.
Coach, did the passing of Karnisek make you reflect on your own legacy one day? I know you've been to plenty of stops, but obviously you've been one of the most successful coaches of all time. Have you had any time to think about your own legacy one day?
You know, I think Lou would say this, and I'll say this now. You know, when you turn 60, I think you get a strong dose of humility over your head like a sledgehammer, and you realize that you're not that substantial. You're really not that as great as you may have thought you were in the 30s. I think that only Lou found it at a young age. I think that my legacy is different than Lou's. My legacy is building a bridge for a lot of different stops for people to cross over. I've had a lot of pros. I've had over 30 assistant coaches become head coaches, a female coach become a head coach. I just think that because I've had so many stops, that if I built a bridge for people to cross over, that's a great legacy to have. And I treasure that. I think that's a great thing, and I'm hoping I can do that here at St. John's. But let's face it, I am 72, and, you know, it's my longevity at St. John's is not going to be like Lou's. He stayed at one place. I think he went to the Nets for a period of time and then came back to St. John's. So he's had a great run. You know, coaches back then, like Dave Gavitt, Lou Karnisek, John Wooden, they retired at a very young age. Now you see Jim Boeheim and some of the other guys that go into their 70s. And
Tom Izzo. Izzo.
But, you know, look, a lot of coaches, see, I'm not anti-NIL. Tom Izzo's anti-NIL, Jay Wright was, Tony Bennett was, anti-portal. I'm not anti that. At all. I think I felt that we've been making millions of dollars for all those years. The players should make money. So I'm for that. Now, I'm not crazy about the transfer portal because, guys, you know, if I need, I have a backup center from USC that I think is going to be a very good player someday, but it's going to take time and effort. Well, he's going to say, well, look, I'm not only playing 10 minutes a game, I'm going to go transfer. They're promising me 30 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
So that part I don't like. But as far as the players being paid, I don't have a problem with that.
There you go. Listen, Rick, really appreciate you hopping on. As you told us at the outset, really sorry for your other losses. It's been a rough weekend for you. It's been a really rough weekend for the St. John's community. But at the end of the day, it's an amazing celebration of one of the iconic figures in New York sports. And, hey, we should all be so lucky to live to 99. So as soon as I saw the news, I said, I got to get Rick on. I need Patino on Monday. Thanks for coming through, man.
Well, guys, raise a toast tonight and say here's to Lou because he deserves it. I think all of New York should toast Lou. Humble, hardworking, great basketball coach, great person, somebody who totally... You know, St. John's is built on kids that don't have money. They work two jobs. 48% of the campus is people who can't afford it, and it's government provided. So it's just hardworking people that need a break in life, and we try to lift people out of poverty. That's the mission of St. John's, and nobody exemplified what the standards of St. John's stood for more than Lou Carnesecca.
Amen. Salute that with that toast, too. Thank you, Coach. I'll see you soon, bud.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, Coach. All right, there you have it. That was fun talking to Rick Pitino. First time I've had him on BT, so thanks for setting that up. Yep. Obviously, you wish it was under different circumstances. But what I was going to say is you think you had a rough week. Wait till you don't make the tournament this year.
Hey,
you better get in.
I'm going to have to crush him. Hey, Rick, you don't make the tournament. It's on, man.
Right.
I mean, geez, that's why you're here. I forget about making the tournament. I got a couple Sweet 16 banners back on that wall. That last one's dusty as hell.
Yeah, I get it.